Once again this morning, we have two John scripture lessons in front of us. A Gospel of John reading coupled with a back-of-the-Bible sermonic letter, which goes by the title of 1 John. So, two Johns for this morning. The first reading that Glenette read was something Jesus said before Easter. The second reading that she read is an after-resurrection scripture lesson, as we have been promising ourselves to do. I once attended a Sunday morning worship service at a church in Owego, New York, called Abide in the Vine, which is a great name for a church. And like all churches, it is imperfect, and like our church is imperfect. But Abide in the Vine is a name that comes with such great aspiration, great direction, and straight from John's gospel. Once again, it is Jesus talking in metaphor, using another one of those famous vivid word pictures that his early listeners would have immediately understood, in a place that has fig groves and that has clusters of grapes hanging. In a place that has these things, would have heard, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower," in a very understood manner. If Jesus said those things, and off to your right was a grape arbor, you'd immediately catch his drift. I am the vine, you all are the branches. If you heard Jesus talking back then, there's a pretty good chance you'd catch his drift. And then there is further talk from Jesus about bearing fruit, which we should understand around here. All of the cherry trees and apple trees and peach orchards that we have, Jesus saying, humans also bear fruit. And then there is further talk of pruning and the dragging off of the discarded and withered dead branches. It is this, what a vine dresser knows and what a good orchardist does, to spur, to encourage, to incite, to expect more growth and vitality for more peaches. Now, I'm not sure what the picture that we'd snap nowadays to capture what Jesus was saying then, to bring it forward, how we'd picture abiding for us. Maybe one way would be to imagine a two-year-old toddler gripping the thumb of her grandmother as they exit their car in a strip mall parking lot and walk towards the parking lot towards an ice cream shop. Little chubby hand grasping a thumb, staying connected, abiding for the good of both hands. And that the hazards could happen if the toddler were to decide on a lark to break free and go it alone. And what all that picture might mean for us when we try to go it alone, without each other. Abide in me as I abide in you. Jesus said that. I think I have flowered this picture, this illustration before, but here it is again. My cousin Jan works for a dairy co-op in upstate New York, and his work has him making service calls from farm to farm. And in this region, there are settlements of Amish and many other various stripes of Mennonite communities. And so Jan would notice and be terribly inquisitive about some of what he saw from his truck window, like, why did one Mennonite farmer have steel wheels with spikes on his tractor? Was it for better traction? Was it for less slippage of the wheels while plowing a field? Was it more efficient use of the diesel fuel? Mennonites often are, if nothing, efficient. Well, down the road in a neighboring field was another Mennonite farmer on his tractor, dressed in similar clothes, plowing with the same number of plow bottoms, but his tractor had the rubber tires. Ryer tubbers with lugs. But why this difference? Was it about traction? Was the rubber tire tractor lighter in weight? therefore affording him better fuel efficiency? Was it that? So my cousin Jan, being Jan, stopped and asked the farmer the reason for the steel wheels on his tractor, and the farmer said, well, if my tractor had rubber tires, then my boys would be driving into town, and I don't want my boys driving into town. Assuming, I guess, that town harbors all things evil. Now, Jan's upstate New York is not really so different than around here, where there are many different religious groupings practicing their faith side by side in one field to another. You can observe some of these practices at sweet corn stands, in skinny silos and unadorned houses, black automobiles and short, reluctant conversations at store cash registers. And I don't know if they know, but these closed communal cultures with their varying tractor wheels do have Greek grammar on their side. They do. When Jesus says, abide in me as I abide in you, the you is plural. More of a, abide in me as I abide in y'all. Y'all abide in me as I abide in y'all's community. Abide with me in the way y'all's community functions together. But, and yet, we know not everything is perfect and idyllic in those communities either. Stuff goes on in them that should not be going on in them. What might look like spick and span clean from the road can be far from perfect on the inside. The Our Stories Untold website surely attests to some of that. For it turns out that evil and hatred does not know fences. Evil and hatred can exist on both sides. And so then, what might this pruning that Jesus talks about mean for a community? What does abiding in the vine look like personally? And what does abiding in the vine look like to a community, to a church? I do not know when the practice of grafting fruit trees began. Maybe Merle does. All I know is that one day I unexpectedly discovered one. The dairy farm on which I grew up had an old apple orchard in it, full of different varieties of apples, and I am pretty sure that some of those old apples must have had purposes that are lost on us in our day and age now, for some of those old apples were dry and gnarly and rusty skinned. For me, the only good thing was to put them on the end of a bendy stick and whip them into the sky and see if I could clear the barn roof with them. And maybe they were good eating for the deer that came by at night. I don't know what their purpose was. Well, so then it happened one day that as a kid, I was roaming through the orchard and looked up into this one particular tree and saw red apples on one branch and green apples on another. Not only were they different colors, they were different shaped fruit, same tree, and I did not know what to think about that. It was strange to me. And so I asked my dad about what I saw, and he said, well, son, the tree is grafted. That is, it is possible to splice a sapling branch off of one tree and graft, that is, attach it to a host tree, and that the branch would live if all things went well. And not only that, it would bear the fruit of its original tree, even though it now got its sap, its nutrients from the root of the host tree. And I don't know if fig trees can be grafted or if you can do that to peach trees like they have around here. I don't know if Jesus knew about tree grafting, but it does seem to me that this idea of abiding that Jesus talked about is connected to that. Abide in me as I abide in you. Stay close, stay tapped in, stay sapped in, stay grafted to me. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. it is as if there can be more than one kind of apple on that tree, but both kinds, both reds and greens, take their life from the same source. There are other word pictures that are tied up in the way Jesus was talking, and some of those word pictures do need some care, I think, like the pruning and the discarding of the withered branches, branches that are pruned off and gathered up and hauled to the edge of the orchard plot and burned up in a fire, which some have equated to the branch burning fires at the edge of the field with the fiery torments of an eternal hell. But is that the main thing that Jesus is talking about? Now that spring has finally arrived up on Rocky Spring Road, my neighbor across the street has pruned his two flowering trees. There's no bonfire up there, but he has chopped up the branches and put them in six rather large black construction-type garbage bags and lined them up along his fence, and I'm not sure where they'll end up. Probably in Green Township's composting site, probably run through a big shredder and composted for mulch. It does not really matter much to us, our neighbors, for what we see in Ray's yard are two beautiful flowering trees. And I have a hunch that that was Jesus' point too. The focus is not on the withered branches and their disposal, but on the fruit that would come later on. And that our lives will also bear some kind of fruit when we take the care to abide in the vine. Last Sunday, we took note of how closely the shepherd image that appears in the Gospel of John also shows up in the back of the Bible book called 1 John, that a good shepherd lays down their life, John, before Easter, and also to lay down our lives for each other, 1 John, after Easter. Today's scripture lessons do the exact same thing. To abide in the vine images from John and extends itself into 1 John. God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them. It is very organic. It is very rural. And once again, it's probably worth noting that the little booklet of John, 1 John, is essentially a sermon for the circuit of John's earliest churches. And like Pastor Leonard Dowd's wife once said of his sermon, there does come a time in a sermon when you need to stop explaining and land that thing. This morning's scripture lesson is kind of like that. 1 John's sermon is at the point of landing that thing. These concise 14 verses we heard read are near the end of the book, and they carry the freight of his sermon. God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts it out, for fear has to do with the punishment, and whoever fears has not reached perfection in love. Those who say, I love God, and who hate their brother and sister are liars. For those who do not love a brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. Land that thing. I'm not always sure what to do with these verses personally, where the boundaries are. It is sometimes torture for an introverted soul to figure out the threshold of between love people and hate people and parse out liar people from seeking people when too many people are already too many people. I'm not always sure what to do about perfected love. And I'm not sure what this is supposed to look like as a church where love is understood to be operational or when love comes off more like a thin layer of veneer. Yet, since Jesus uses the metaphor of a vine that bears fruit, then I suspect what we are to take from this is a growth image, both personally and corporately. Like we said last week, in 1 John, there is a lot of we-ing and us-ing going on. Today's 1 John reading has him landing the sermon in his circuit of early churches, saying, folks, God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them. He would be saying to them, God is not like the fickle bunch of gods that you hear Greeks and Romans talking about in the streets. God is not fickle. God is not capricious. God is love. And then there comes this staccato word, this barrage of one word that keeps repeating and repeating and repeating. Those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them. Abide, abide, abide. It's almost monotonous. And this word abide is also a tricky word to begin with. It's not easy to nail down. Abide is a movable word, passive on the one hand, active on the other. Abide is to stay rooted in one place and to be rooted to the source, but also to grow, to change, to multiply, rooted but not standing still. Abide is a risky word too, a vulnerable word. For if we stay connected to Jesus, we set ourselves up to be pruned. Not haphazardly, but purposefully, carefully, towards our growth. Abide is also a humbling word. The nourishment that we receive from Jesus is not of our making. We cannot muster up the love of God on our own. We cannot squint our eyes shut and get love. We must receive it. And so abiding is truly a humbling word, especially if we are the type of person that is pick them up by our own bootstraps kind of people. We don't muster up love. We receive it from God's own self, God's very source. That's what it means when it says God is love. God's very source, kind of like in last Sunday evening's gathering, love coming from God, the source. And abiding is also a communal verb. It is meant for the us-ing and the we-ing of people. Our steel-wheeled tractor neighbors do have a greater sense of this than many of us do. When you stand at CVRC's cutting table during meat canning week, you experience a collective. These are not Lone Ranger Christians. They are abiding with fellow brancher people. Mr. John is landing his sermon with, "Beloved, since God loved us so much, we ought to love one another." Abiding is a communal verb. It keeps branching out and connecting. It's been a little while, but during Lent, we dwelled heavily on the phrase open and mutually transforming church. And one week, we separated the ing from the transforming, and we suggested that our Christian faith has a maturing activity about it, that we've all got places to grow. There is no perfect church tradition. There is no perfect community either. Steel wheels and well-kempt houses and white picket fences do not perfection make. There is no perfect church. Marian Mennonite Church is not a perfect church either. But according to this morning's scripture lessons, abiding is part of the job description. And to be a community of faith is to create a place where love will flourish in its forgiveness and in its fruits of the Spirit.